Even the gnarliest of trail runners need to get out on the pavement sometimes. So head over to scottrunning.nz for a fantastic deal on the Pursuit road shoes. You can get them for the sweet price of $99. And I've been using these for a while. They're light, they're cushioned, they're responsive. They're great for when, you know, you're not on the trails, you're on the roads, and there is a beauty in that suffering too. Head over to scottrunning.nz for a sweet deal. And while you're there, or just after you've finished, head over to ultraspire.nz to check out their sale, because, I mean, you want to get inspired to get back on the trails. They've got a whole range of packs. They've got sweet deals on the Big Bronco, the Epic XT3, Astral 4, Summit XT, reservoirs, cups, all that stuff that's going to get you right into your training and be really useful for you and thinking about your big races coming up over the next couple of months. Head to ultraspire.nz for more. If you're not all shopped out, you use the code at wildthings.club and sign up to become a VIP member and use the code DCR2023 and you'll get $20 credit to drop in the Wild Things store. Now, Wild Things is an Aotearoa Trail institution, online community, strong in person too. They are powerful and they are wonderful. And if you use the code DCR2023, $20 credit in the Wild Things store. Sam Harvey is taking on the world at Big's Backyard in a couple of weeks. Yep, that's right, Big's Backyard. He's going to keep trying to run forever, and he just might do it. One of the things that's going to help him along the way is Currens. It'll be aiding in his recovery and keeping that inflammation at bay. If you head to currens.co.nz to read up on the science behind these wonderful little purple capsules, you'll get 20% off with your first order of Currens 30s with the code DIRTCHURCH. Support local. Wonderful isn't a word, and reject the black current industrial complex. Further Faster. We've loved Further Faster from the jump. They love us. We've been rocking their good gear for ages, but also Rigby, my best friend, has been rocking rough wear since the jump. If you head to furtherfaster.co.nz, check out the range of rough wear leads, collars, harnesses, and accessory to keep your dog looking great and keeping safe out there on the trails. Rigby loves his collar and lead as much as a dog can love anything. He certainly looks very, we think he looks very handsome in it. But if you head to www.furtherfaster.co.nz for the friendly advice, or visit them at 57A Buchan Street, Sydenham, Otutahi, Christchurch, the best independently owned outdoor store in the known universe.
Something like Further Faster there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to Further Faster now.
Oh, Further Faster there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to Further Faster now.
DIRTCHURCH Radio.
Episode 252 of DIRTCHURCH Radio. I'm Matt Raymond.
And I'm Eugene Bingham. Tēnā koutou. We made it. Well, we've kind of made it.
It's our second ever in-car podcast.
Second?
Yeah, the first one was when Sean Collins did his big run around Auckland.
That's right. Yeah, we're at Riverhead Forest in the car after an epic little run this morning.
Yeah, it was certainly very nice to stretch the legs after after Blue Lake and get back amongst it and get out with you, brother, on the gravel. Can't really call it trail, can you? But it was the gravel, and Riverhead certainly delivered this morning.
Yeah, it was nice, and it's delivering again, giving us a nice little atmosphere for our catch up. The fog is lifting, the people are arriving, yeah. The river is running, all is well in the world. Anyway. You're getting a little bit off track. Look, I just wanted to give you a bit of an update on some things. Mm. Not you, Matt. You, the listeners. If you haven't already, you should watch Run, Sam, Run. It's about, can you guess?
It's about Sam Harvey.
Well done. And it's by stuff colleagues of mine, Mike White and Lawrence Smith. And it is a fantastic insight into Sam right before he takes on Big's recommended viewing. Part of our movie club. That can go with our book club.
Yeah, we should actually, maybe that's something for the future, recommend we should have a media section on our website, but that would involve us actually engaging with anything apart from putting this podcast out.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Anyway, link in the show notes. Check it out if you haven't already.
Another thing to be aware of, our friends from Speed Freaks. Speed Freaks, you know, direct action, recovery driven, running as a form of delayed gratification and endorphin. They're on a recruitment drive in Tamaki Makaurau, Auckland. They continue to grow. We heard from Anna, who had this to say about it. But if you want to know more about Speed Freaks, head back into the archive to episode 59. You won't be disappointed. Also, here's another thing. If you go to any shoe science store with any of the gear, you know, as runners, we accumulate a lot of gear.
Yeah.
We've all got a lot of gear. We've all probably got more gear than we know what to do with. There are some people out there who don't have a dog to bark at them. They don't have the means to engage in the sport, and it could be really useful. I dropped off a bunch of stuff to Shoe Science, and Ben Fraser came in and got it, and it felt really good. So if any of your gear, lightly used or used, that you want to donate to Speed Freaks, any Shoe Science store, just drop it off. But 24th October, we'll be hosted by Shoe Science Mount Eden, sharing the Speed Freak Story program, connecting community through running and walking. Growing numbers means more superstar coaches are needed. Space is limited and tickets are through Eventbrite, and we will put that link in our show notes.
Yeah, so get along and see Anna and the crew from Speed Freaks at Shoe Science Mount Eden on the 24th of October. Right, this week, we caught up with she's a force of nature. Sarah Pendergrass, who's recently finished running, 670-odd, was it? Yeah, kilometres. The length of Scotland, light to light. Scottish-born but Australian-based. She's got so many strings to her bow. If we started listing them, we'd be here all day. But here are some of them, so I am just going to start. She's an ultra runner. She's a bike packer. She's an illustrator. She's a copywriter. She's a podcaster. She is someone who loves to dream and adventure. I really enjoyed this conversation. It had depth, it had humor, and of course it had animal stories, because it is DCR and we couldn't go an interview without one. So yeah, stick around for that. But first, we should try this.
Greatest run ever, which is the part of the show where we ask you to write into us and tell us your greatest run ever. It doesn't have to be a race or a mountain summit. It might just be a run around the block, something that's sung to you for some reason. Send them in to us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. And this is from Lucy Cookson. My greatest run ever is definitely not my fastest, nor my longest, nor in fact a true run as such. There was plenty of hiking involved on this day, she writes, but it was a run which enabled me to process and begin to heal after suffering insurmountable grief after losing my son in an avalanche in the mountains that my family hold so dear. The day dawned sunny and clear, and it was time for me to be brave, put my sneakers on, and get out the door. For weeks or so prior, I'd been stuck inside my own wee family bubble, crippled by the boredom that grief brings. I was buoyed by a friend who I ran with regularly and I committed before I gave myself an excuse to say no. Stupidly, and perhaps blindly, I ventured into the mountains looking for some respite from the emotional pain. The first few kilometres were straight up, and the physical pain was certainly a distraction. Our route was taking us up from the bottom of Porter's ski field, up the ridgeline, to the tops of Mount Ennis and Mount Cloudsley, back to Castle Hill Village. Thank you, Wild Things, for the trail directory, she writes. I slowly committed to every step, one foot in front of the other, while verbally pouring out thoughts, feelings, and having nonsensical discussions with my running mate. We admired the view on the way up. I cried a bit, I laughed a bit, I swore a lot, and finally made it to the top. On reaching the top, we marvelled at seeing all our special places, the mountain where I ski with my family, my running mate's incredible farm, the river my family boat on and where my son used to fish, the many places we had run together and ridgelines we planned to tackle in the future. We worked out which peaks we needed to hit and then blindly followed the ridgeline, commenting on how lucky we were to be able to have bodies that allowed us to reach this point. There were more laughs along the way and, to be brutally honest, more bad language. And then when we realised we were a few peaks short of where we needed to be, but we ticked along quietly together, enjoying the space and place where we were, lucky to be blessed with no wind and glorious sunshine. As we steadily descended back towards the bush line, the well-formed tracks and ultimately civilization, I thought about the friend who I was running with and how she gave me time, patience and courage to do this run, and how the connections I have made through running the trails are just as important as the way it physically makes me feel. On finally reaching the car, my exhaustion reminded me that I was alive and I needed to continue to get out on the trails to help me navigate through this new normal I now faced. When running with friends, we always rank our adventures just to remind ourselves where we have been. But this is my greatest run ever because it reminded me how important the trails and the mountains are in my life. A place where I can feel free of judgment, a place where I can reflect on the stillness, and a place where I can feel closer to a much-loved son whom I'll miss forever, but whom I know is still in the mountains somewhere watching over his family.
Well, they see, ka aroha. That was amazing. And thank you for taking us on that journey with you just now. Extraordinary. And yeah, you're so right about those friends on the trail as well, aren't you? Wow. Thank you, Lucy.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? And not to sort of, you know, tack on the back of that, I mean, that's so powerful, it speaks for itself. But here we are, sitting in the back of your car after going on a trail run, and we've been doing this for 5 years, and you still have experiences where something will come out and, you know, you form a new connection, you get a new perspective, you sort of see into that space where other people are, and that's what's, I guess, so beautiful about this community.
Yeah, and I just probably should explain that when we get the greatest runs ever, we don't read them until Matt starts reading them. And so we kind of come on this journey with you of discovering what this greatest run ever is about. And yeah, that, Lucy, thank you. Right, on with our chat with Sarah Pendergrass.
Yeah, as we said at the top, multiple strings to the bow. The reason why we wanted to speak to Sarah was around her Light to Light, which was when she ran the length of Scotland. And then you'll find out from this conversation, there's multiple other facets. We could have done a number of them. Check out her illustrations. I mean, we'll put the link in the show notes. She's been featured in some pretty big, you know, online publications, and her podcast, Into the Wee Hours. But look, you know, without further delay or faffing about from us, enjoy this conversation with Sarah Prendergrass.
Digits Radio.
Thank you for having me on.
No, thank you,
thanks,
Sarah.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Sarah, welcome to Dirt Church Radio. How are you?
I am very well. How are you two?
Look, apart from the minor heart attack, the technical difficulty before, doing well.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Look, you've got a lot of strings to your bow. You know, you do the whole all the gear nay idea thing. Bike packing, illustrator, adventurer, podcaster, and you ran the length of Scotland, or, you know, a significant portion of the length of Scotland. I mean, how are you feeling after that?
Yeah, I feel good. I think it almost feels like a dream already, and I've only been back not even 3 weeks, but it was just such a whirlwind of finish work, fly back to Scotland. I'm based on the Sunshine Coast on Gubbi Gubbi Country in Queensland. Run 2 days later, fly back to Australia, the next day start work. So it's just been a mad whirlwind of, yeah, I don't even know how I am. I'm still working that out.
Isn't it so we do that to ourselves, don't we? We have these massive adventures planned and we look forward to them. And then once they're done, they're really quickly in the rearview mirror, aren't they?
Yeah, it's so true. And it was funny how many people said to me, oh, are you coming back via Bali? Are you going to have some time off after? Because I was just like running for 24 days, 23 days running and one rest day. And like the reality is I'm a freelancer, as you mentioned, Matt. I've got a few things going on and I wasn't able to. So that's, you know, it was like, if I'm going to do this, this is what it looks like. And then, yeah, you get back and it's like, oh my God, I was sleeping in a tent and running every day. And now I'm back and everything is just like it was a month ago. Nothing's changed, but I feel like I'm a little bit different.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the case. I'm sure that's the case because we can't help but be impacted by those sorts of cool adventures. Can we wind back a stage? And you mentioned you being on the Sunshine Coast. How did you end up there?
Yeah, so I guess I'm not from Australia originally, as you may guess by my accent. Although when I went back to Scotland, everyone was like, where are you from? So I don't know where I'm from anymore. But yeah, I moved out to Australia from Scotland over a decade ago now. I was originally in Sydney and had a great time living in Sydney. But essentially decided that, you know what, I lived in this huge city, and in this city pretty much never left my suburb, which was the classic Pom in Oz going to Bondi, and looked around and was like, oh, what do I enjoy here? And it was the beach, and it was like all of that classic Bondi stuff, and lived in a 1976 combi for a while. Traveled around for about 6 months and found Noosa and the Sunshine Coast and was like, I think this would be a pretty nice spot to be. So moved up there not long after.
Noosa is such a great spot.
Have you been?
Yeah. Well, I will say that my running experience there was, is it a national park?
Is that? Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I ran clapping my hands and singing because I was terrified of snakes.
I've heard that clapping hands and singing is the ultimate way to let them know you're on your way.
Yeah. Luckily, none of them came out and joined me, joined in clapping or anything. Like, before we bite you, we're going to clap along with you.
A little celebration.
Two questions. First thing is, how would a snake clap? And second is, are we doing the high leg kicks as well with the clapping? Like, that's a...
No, but I'll give that a try next time. To your first question, what about two snakes together? I don't know. They're quite cunning from what I understand. Anyway, sorry, I think I've taken this off track. Noosa is a cool place to be. So how long have you been there?
Gosh, I don't know. Maybe 7 years, possibly, on the Sunshine Coast. I'm not in Noosa specifically, but yeah, it's been a while. Yeah.
And I just said, apart from my ridiculous running style, it is a good place to run.
It is a good place to run, yeah. We are very fortunate here. We've got a lot of nice coastal trails and beach, and then the hinterland is also beautiful. And side note, I was actually bitten by a snake while I was training for this adventure.
Was it the lack of clapping that it got you, or?
I didn't know about the high legs and the clapping and the singing. This is clearly the problem.
Matt's just he's just died a little bit inside because you validated all my fears and years of terror of animals. So come on, what happened?
Well, it's also, it sounds more impressive than it was because it was a dry bite. So I didn't actually, like, the venom didn't go in. Yeah, it's crazy. I've run on the trails here so much. I've seen so many snakes. You do, for sure. And now I have a trail dog, Ness, who is exceptional at spotting snakes. So I feel like I see them even more. But yeah, essentially was out running. Felt what I thought was what we call in these parts a stick bite. Because so often sticks will kind of like bang off your leg, and you know, snake bites are a pretty firm punch like that as well. So I was like, oh, it's a stick bite. And it was only when I actually looked at the site that I saw the little fang things. But I always, like, I was really fortunate. Like, yeah, nothing happened. I always carry a snake bandage. I do have wilderness first aid training, so I was ready. But yeah, I was lucky.
Eugene and I were just talking before how excited we are. We've just got our itinerary to go back to Australia for UTK, and I think I'm just going to pack it in. I was really happy until this. And now I'm just, it's, I mean, but this is the thing, isn't it? You live in a country where, and I feel like we bring it up all the time, but there's nothing, unless you're swimming in like a meat wetsuit in Stewart Island, nothing really bad's going to happen animal-wise. And in Australia, it's been a bit of a crash course and unseen terror for us both, yeah. So
you acclimatized though, and to be honest, part of my, you know, I did just go home and run through Scotland, and part of my excitement was like running through long grass and there being no fear whatsoever. It's like, this is... piles of leaves, all these things that I realized subconsciously I'm very switched on to. I was like, cool, I can run anywhere and I'm okay.
You're throwing your snake bandage out the back, you know, you're just sort of like, don't need that.
Exactly. Although there are adders, but I didn't see any, so yep.
I don't reckon it would be the same. Look, let's wind it back. We started with the fact that we're terrible at podcasting, and then, you know, that you ran across Scotland, and we can circle back to that. But where did your running start? Has it been something you've always done?
I guess when I look back, it's something I've always done, but not specifically for running per se. So growing up, I played a lot of team sport pretty competitively. I played lacrosse and hockey at international level at junior. So I was always running to train, but I never really considered myself running. It was just like I'm running to be fit to run around a pitch. And then, yeah, my like specific focus on running, when I was at uni, like I ran a 10K for the first time and thought that was pretty amazing. I'd run 10 kilometers just to run 10 kilometers. And in 2012, I was in Sydney and thought, oh, it'd be cool to like run a half marathon and see what that's like. And at the time, that seemed like an enormous feat and something that I was no idea if I could do. Did that, was like, oh, that was pretty fun. And let's do a marathon now. Ran Sydney Marathon in 2012, and it could not have been a more rookie effort. I ran like a half marathon PB in the first half and then died. Like, I had no idea about nutrition. I was like, what are these gel things, which then caused stomach issues. I cramped so badly. It took me 5 hours, and I got to the finish line at the Opera House, and they were like, oh, these are the only t-shirts we have left. And it was like XXXXL. And it was like this technical tee that I couldn't even wear as like pajamas, you know. And after that, it was like, that's fine. I am never, ever running again. And I don't think I honestly ran for a few years. It was horrendous. I absolutely hated it. And it wasn't really until I moved up to the Sunshine Coast and was like, oh, how am I going to meet people? What am I going to do? And triathlon seems to be a big thing in Noosa. So I was like, oh, try triathlon. Did some of that. And then discovered trails and was like, forget triathlon. Like, people don't run over each other on the trails. People are super friendly. There's an amazing community. People want to help me learn and understand and grow in this. And yeah, kind of that's how the trail running started, essentially, with in Noosa National Park, actually, to loop back to that.
There you go. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I've never had someone run over the top of me in a trail race, as far as I can remember. But yeah, it is a thing, isn't it? And triathlons, bless them, we love them, but you know, yeah, a little bit brutal.
It's a very different vibe. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I listened to a podcast with a Navy SEAL, and he said he thought he was like super, super cool, and he'd done a lot of hard things, and he said until he found himself getting like kicked in the face by a 47-year-old real estate agent during an Ironman swim. He said it was legitimately the hardest thing he'd ever done in his life. It doesn't sound that fun.
No, it is. It's a very different vibe. Like, that's for sure. And you know, one of the things I love about trails is it does feel like a much more community spirited thing. We are looking out for each other. There's a safety factor in that often as well, for sure. But it feels much more like an adventure.
Unlike, say, a 4K swim.
Yeah, but they have water safety. It's high, like, it's a different thing.
Look, we're really getting offside with it. Sorry, Simon Cochrane, if you're listening to this, great run on the weekend, bro. But he's a triathlete and very good on trails, and a very nice man. Sorry, I'm digging myself.
He wouldn't kick you in the face. Well, he probably would actually.
He absolutely would. Yeah. So he lapped me. Yeah. He lapped everyone at Blue Lake, but he lapped me at one of the transitions. And someone on the mic was like, "Yeah, he just lapped Matt Raymond." I was like, "That is the most low hanging fruit ever." Like, well done, you kicked a piglet to death. You tipped out a bowl of jelly onto the floor and set it on fire. Yeah, no, he's super fast, but he does, in all seriousness, he does bring that triathlon intensity to the trails. But I mean, you ran a lot, and you came over here and did some races.
What was that?
Mm-hmm. And you came over here and did some races. What was that like?
Yes, I did. Oh my gosh, I love New Zealand so much. I raced Tarawera, which I'm going to call the pronunciation of. Just like
you nailed it.
You got it.
I was going to say I'll help you with Kosciuszko. Yeah, I ran the 50 in 2019, and like that was a really pivotal moment in my life as well. And just had the best time, and so much of that was community. So, Nick Aysen, shout out Single Track Collective. She's Wellington based. I met her because I was being coached by David Roche at the time, and so was she. So we were both on swap. And I ended up in a position where I didn't have any accommodation. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to come across. And she was like, no, come, stay in our accommodation. She even sorted out a mountain bike for me. So we went riding in the Redwoods the day before the race and just had the best time out there. So, yeah. And I've done a bunch of adventure type running in New Zealand as well. And, oh. I'm constantly like, I'm moving to New Zealand. I love it so much.
So, I mean, and then I guess things wend and things change, and bikepacking is a big part of your life as well, or that sort of adventure side. I mean, what drew you to, you're quite hard to, there's quite a lot going on. What was the impetus for that?
Yeah, so I actually started riding mountain bikes because when would it have been, like, in 2018, in a past life, I was married to a guy who's, for his 40th, we were going to race Red Bull Defiance in New Zealand. And I had never ridden a mountain bike and was like, probably need to sort that out for Red Bull Defiance. Like, the trail running is cool and the rest and the paddling. I've worked as a kayak guide as well. I'm good with that. But the mountain biking, I had no idea. So I started riding and then was like, whoa, I was really resistant to riding bikes because I was so passionate about running, and then discovered how much fun riding bikes is as well. Like, I'd done road stuff, but that wasn't super appealing. But being on the trails, being outdoors, taking on all the technical stuff, I absolutely loved. And then I guess through that mountain bike community and that off-road community, discovered a thing called a gravel bike, discovered bike packing. And I just love mapping routes and adventuring and spending hours on heat maps trying to find new places to go. And I don't love carrying weight on my back. Like, hiking with a 60-litre pack does not appeal to me whatsoever, other than the places you can go, but I hate carrying the stuff. So the bike carries it all for you, and you can also cover pretty significant distances. So yeah, that's kind of where the bike packing thing started. And just the ability around here, I can very quickly get off-road onto gravel, go and explore, do an overnighter, do a longer trip, whatever it looks like, yeah.
What's the setup of your bike? You mentioned the bike can carry it.
How long do you have? I realize this is not a bike packing podcast.
And I see you've got a bike in the background. This is just like, here's one I prepared earlier.
You can see all my laundry from my trip as well, probably, because I am not the person that sorts my shit out when I get home from an international trip.
I just saw the bike and I was like, oh, okay, maybe I shouldn't have asked that question, because now it'll be show and tell.
Yeah.
Which doesn't work so well on a podcast. But tell me, please. I am interested.
It varies. I mess with lots of setups, but it's essentially a combination of strapping a tent and a sleep system to my handlebars, probably. If, depending on the bike I use, having a frame bag that carries my food and my water and my stove, and then running some kind of system on the rear, either a saddlebag or, because I have really short legs, I don't have very much clearance for a saddlebag, so I run a rack and something on that with some clothes and whatever else I need. It's just very simple, and that's something that appeals to me so much.
Mm. It's quite, I mean, that's in itself part of the thrill, I guess, is being able to figure out how you're going to carry everything and how to do it efficiently and lightly, but still be prepared and everything.
Yeah, I'm such a gear nerd, and so I love playing with that stuff. And yeah, you essentially have your bicycle, and it's like your bedroom being your tent and your kitchen being your stove, and everything's there and you're good to go.
Yeah. Matt's our resident bike nerd.
I'm a former bike nerd. But, I mean, I guess this is kind of, we've spent this sort of 20 minutes going, and you did this, and you did this, and you did this, and you did this. But I love the Radivist, which is a cycling page set up by John Watson, who was probably not probably. And I was flicking through it, and I know that person's illustration. There's Sarah Pendergrass. How did that come about?
Okay, I found this on the web for...
Oh. I don't need to talk. You've got Siri that's, that's in place.
I'll just get Siri to explain it. I'll just get Siri to explain it to me.
Are you trying to tell me something, guys? I can stop at any time.
Two middle-aged dudes mansplain bikepacking to the person who does it. Yeah, via Siri. It's a new twist on podcasting. No, to read... I feel so embarrassed about that. To rewind, I mean, how did you get featured? Like, that's a pretty big deal to go from, like, tutuing around with illustrations, which you're very, very good at, and they're very cool, to being on that major kind of platform.
Yeah, I mean, I am literally just playing on an iPad, drawing stuff I love and annotating it with my thoughts on gear is what it typically is. And I think you were the person that actually alerted me to the fact that the Radivist had featured me, weren't you? You messaged me on Instagram and I was like, oh shit, that is pretty cool. And I actually then discovered that I think they featured me 3 or 4 times. And it's honestly, it's as simple as I started by tagging them on one of my first illustrations and then kind of got in touch from then. So yeah, just reposting essentially, but it's a pretty cool platform to be featured on for sure.
Do you find that, I mean, sometimes with, like, there's a Venn diagram between moving at your own speed, whether it's on wheels or foot or pedaling, and creativity, and sometimes it's not a Venn diagram. They're quite separate. It's kind of a rare person who can do both and be in that creative space. Does one inform the other for you?
Firstly, I love Venn diagrams.
What is there to love about a Venn diagram? Like, let me in on this secret.
They're so, like, curious and potentially playful, and look at that, you can look at the intersection of things you might never have expected before.
True. All right, I'm gonna look at them in a new way. Maybe not love, but I'll appreciate them more. Thank you.
To Matt's question, I'm not sure if I would perceive it as one informing the other, but there's definitely a very strong Venn diagram overlap, and maybe the flow of whether it's creativity first or adventure first, I mean, they come together very often for me, 100%. And funnily enough, at the start of the year, I like to choose like a word or a value or something that I want to live by for that year. And creativity was my word for this year. And when I initially thought of it, I was thinking of writing and illustration and photography and that kind of stuff. And then very quickly realized it comes through all of my adventure as well. And be that something as simple as drawing gear or maps, because I love drawing maps as well, it's actually like mapping the route and the creativity around that side of things as well.
So then let's move through to the, you know, the big run of the moment. Where did the idea for Light to Light come from?
So I reckon it, like, the seed was planted quite a while ago, either 2017 or 2018. And 2017 was the year I ran my first ultra, which was, I flew back to Scotland actually and ran 55 kilometers around one of the Scottish islands, the Isle of Tiree. And that was just such a cool adventure around the perimeter of the island. And it was like, oh, this is cool what we can do on 2 feet, you know, on the trails, seeing this island essentially. And I read a book by Anna McNuff called The Pants of Perspective. And it's about her journey fast packing the length of New Zealand. And I feel like the minute I read that, I was like, whoa, that is something I would love to do, like a multi-day point-to-point type adventure. When I lived in Scotland, I wasn't a trail runner. And so however this came together, it was essentially like, oh, it'd be so cool to do that in Scotland, because I hiked a bit, but I don't know the trails. Like, I just ran nearly 700 kilometers of trails that I had never, ever been on before. So it was like, hang on, this is a cool way for me to reconnect with Scotland and see the country that I essentially am from in a different way. And so, yeah, that was back in 2017, 2018. Had a lot of life changes in that time. There was this thing called a global pandemic. I discovered riding bikes.
Didn't hear that.
No, I was probably best to skip. And yeah, discovered bikes and everything else. And then kind of just this year was like, hang on, this idea is just still in my heart and I'm gonna go after it.
And what was the experience of going back to that sort of creativity side? How long did it take you to figure out a route and what you were going to do, and what was that process of mapping it and planning it?
So initially, I essentially looked for an easy option, which was, what are the existing trail networks? And I knew that there were long distance trails like the West Highland Way that I've wanted to run for years and had never been on. So it's like, okay, I definitely want the West Highland Way to be part of that. I also, at the time, was really keen, like, listeners might have heard of the Cape Wrath Ultra, depending on your Scotland knowledge, but I was really keen to run that ultra and was like, oh, that would be cool to have as part of it. And then just started looking at this idea of the length of Scotland, maybe that's the thing, like, how do I really want it to be a point-to-point journey. So then, obviously, I'm like, well, what's the most southerly point of the country? Because I was already looking at the most northerly point. And yeah, essentially went from there. So just what was like, how do I connect on existing trail networks, more or less, staying on trail as much as I can, from the most southerly point, which is the lighthouse at the Mull of Galloway, to, it was initially the most northerly point. And I know you have interviewed someone who did
Matt Girvan.
Yeah.
He did a slightly different route at the start, but it ended up on Cape Wrath. When I started looking at, I was initially going to do this completely solo and unsupported. And when I started looking at resupply and all of that and knowing my timeline as well, I then thought, hang on, I love the Outer Hebrides. I've been wild camping and surfing there in the past. I've had tents destroyed on those islands. It would be cool to go back and see them potentially in different weather. And then just really like that. Just seemed like a very romantic notion of covering these 10 remote islands joined by causeways and ferries. And the most northerly point of those islands is at a lighthouse as well at the Butt of Lewis, which is almost on the same latitude as the most northerly point of mainland Scotland. So that's pretty much how the light-to-light route was born.
No, I was just going to say, I love the names. You know, and it's funny to kind of, you have a little giggle, Butt of Lewis, you know, but I can also imagine my boss is Scottish and would be like, what's funny about that? And I'd be like, nothing at all. You know, the history of that and the interconnectedness and that idea of romanticism and the wildness. It didn't, to be fair, like following you along on the journey, lots of it didn't seem very romantic. How was the journey?
I mean, I'm not going to lead with romantic, that's for sure. It was an adventure. And, you know, you talk about the wildness. I was actually, weather is a big factor in Scotland, and I actually specifically chose to run south to north because of the prevailing wind, knowing that that would be a big factor, especially when you get to the islands, there are no trees, it's very windy. But it was, yeah, I honestly think I'm still processing, but it was an adventure. There were highs and there were lows, and it wasn't necessarily what I expected. I learned a lot of lessons from it in terms of like who I am and how I like to adventure. And it was kind of a strange experience in the sense that I love solo adventure, but I'm not used to sharing. I shared every day on Instagram, essentially, as much as I could. For some reason, I kind of committed to that in my head and I started doing it. And at one point I was like, forget it. I'm shutting this down. Like, opening up the conversation around my adventure while I was out there was very different. I'm used to adventuring and then typically I will share after the fact, and that gives me space to think about like, how do I want to share, and not necessarily open up dialogue with strangers, in all honesty. So yeah, it was, there were so many new experiences for me in terms of not how I typically adventure, I guess.
How was the, you know, you trained, there was a process, there was a journey, you were coached by Nick at Single Track Collective,
yeah,
right?
Exactly,
But there's only so much preparation that you can do, and then you're doing like 200 plus kilometer weeks. How was that adjustment on the body?
Yeah, I had no idea what to expect, that's for sure. I've never run 200 kilometers in a week. And bearing in mind, a lot of it was on trail as well. And actually, a lot of it, and it seems so silly because I chose a very coastal route, but a lot of it was on beach. And I, for some reason, hadn't really considered that. And beach can look like deep sand, rocks, pebbles, kelp, and often a camber. And I find that pretty tough. And even the mental thing of like, okay, sometimes I could see for miles and it's like, oh my God, I'm running on this same beach for a long freaking time. So yeah, in terms of my body, I feel like I started off really well. I was also camping along the way, and I really think that sleeping in a tent and even just the pitching it every night, taking it down every morning, I feel like that really adds to the kind of difficulty element, shall we say, you know, not getting that same sleep, sleeping on the ground, all the rest that you're dealing with. So I was pretty stoked. Like the first week I was like, wow, I feel like my body's doing really well. I was like definitely not pushing pace. I was very protective of myself because I didn't know what to expect. And I am not in the best form of my life, that is for sure. And I was very aware of that. And then, yeah, like day 9, 10, 11, I think in hindsight, I had COVID. And it was rough, like really, really rough. And I do look back and think, wow, that's, I am surprised that I got up and still, you know, did 30Ks or however many hours that was, because I was going so slowly. But I just thought that it was my body responding to, I didn't really know what was going on, but I was like, maybe it's my body responding to this weird thing I'm doing, because I also went into the adventure really exhausted. Like I had been so busy at work, planning this was a daily thing. You know, the logistics of finding 25 nights of camping and doing all my GPX routes, and like there was so much involved in it that was literally every single day. And I got on the plane and was just so relieved to not have to do anything for 30 hours. So I just thought, oh, my body's just having a fit. And Matt, you actually sent me a really nice message that was like, your body's like, what's going on? And you said something like, you are impossibly strong. And I was so grateful for that message, because I was receiving so much unsolicited advice about taking magnesium and have you considered taking a rest day? And, you know, I want to look at that with like compassion, and people were just being supportive. But honestly, like, because I was so tired and feeling so like a zombie, I was just like, do you not realize how much I've planned and prepared? And, you know, like, if a rest day were an option, I'd be taking a rest day, but that's not the adventure I've planned. And if I take a rest day, I miss a section and I really don't want to. So, yes. After that, though, when the pain and the shivers and the freezingness and all of that stuff lifted, I felt like I got momentum again and was definitely cautious. And it wasn't until the last few days where I was like, well, I can actually still run like a 5:30 minute kilometer, but I've just been so careful because I'm just not sure. So yeah, I'm very grateful for my body for carrying me through, that's for sure.
It's amazing what the body can do.
It is amazing. And the mind and spirit as well, right? Because you've got to ultimately get your legs out there. So yeah.
Especially, yeah, I mean, not many people have had COVID. I mean, millions of people have had COVID, tens of millions. Not many people have run trails and slept in tents while having COVID. That's, you know, that's amazing.
Well, and also it probably sounds irresponsible. I don't know for sure if I did have COVID, but what happened?
Oh, no, that wasn't meant to be not at all.
No. I realize that. But my mum stayed with me one of the nights when I was really sick, and she's avoided COVID the entire pandemic in the UK. And a few days later, she came down with COVID, and it's like, oh, our symptoms are pretty similar, and you don't seem to be running 30Ks a day. So,
yeah. You haven't got fatigue from running. Yeah.
Yeah.
Indeed. What, in terms of the remoteness, can you give us an idea of, you know, how long you would go without seeing people on the trail, or, you know, what sort of terrain were you going? You've mentioned beaches, but were you going through villages, or, you know, what was the interaction with other humans like?
Yeah, it was very varied depending on where I was on the route, to be honest.
Yeah.
There were sections where, yeah, I'd just be out on like coastal cliffs and just accompanied by sheep, and that was it. There were sections where I'd be going through villages for sure, sections of road as well, where people would be passing. And then, ironically, in probably more remoter spots like the West Highland Way, it was probably the most, well, it was the most highly trafficked trail by humans because it's a popular route. So in other spots where I'd be like, oh my God, like I can't believe no one's here, and I wouldn't see anyone for hours, but there were towns nearby, it's just the trails weren't used. And there was a lot of overgrown trail to navigate as well. But yeah, when it came to the West Highland Way, it was more populated and people were kind of doing their own thing through hiking that. And then in the Outer Hebrides, I just spent hours not seeing anyone each day. Occasionally, maybe if I got onto a part of the route, there's a bike packing route as well for that, then I'd maybe see a cyclist or someone. But generally, I just talked to myself all day long until I got to camp. And I love that. So that was fine.
You mentioned reconnecting with Scotland, and it sounds like you had a lot of time to do that, and a lot of, no distraction. It's just you and this countryside. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I did, in the sense of reconnecting with the landscape, you know, like really like the smells and like the feeling of the trail beneath my feet and going through moorland and across mountains and a lot of coastal scenery as well. At the same time, because I was on this schedule, shall we say, I had my international flight that landed. I then started. I knew I had to finish. I had 2 days before I flew back to Australia. It also felt quite rushed in a way. You know, it's like there would have been spots where I'd have loved to have stopped and stayed over with someone, or, you know, I don't know, just explored more in that area. But it was like, nope, I've got my route and I need to stick to that. And that's something that, again, is probably on reflection, is not necessarily how I like to adventure, but that was the adventure that I'd set for myself.
Mm. So you talked about the preparation that you did and the GPX maps and all that sort of stuff. And what was the, you know, the comparison between what you'd imagined and what you'd mapped out versus how it was? Was there, you know, had you seen what it was going to be, or were there things that surprised you?
Yeah, I like an element of surprise. I'm not an over researcher, really. So certainly things like I started, for context, if anyone's familiar with Scotland, I started on the Mull of Galloway coastal trail and connected that to the Ayrshire coastal path. And the Ayrshire Coastal Path was the first place where I got onto a moorland, and it was all in bloom and bright purple and just absolutely stunning. And it probably wasn't until that I was like, oh yeah, this is like the Scotland that I hadn't really realized I was waiting for, but that I am waiting for, you know. And not to say the beaches and everything weren't amazing, but it's a more familiar environment now that I live in Australia, albeit windier and colder, don't get me wrong. But yeah, that was kind of the like, oh no, now I'm in Scotland. And the West Highland Way was just... yeah, it was so stunning. And I really had moments of like running downhill, just looking around me thinking, okay, now I'm in the mountains and this is like your real, it just was like iconic Scotland, I feel. And that was just a moment of excitement. And then I think like the diversity was something I was looking forward to and that I definitely received, because when you move out onto the islands, that's remote, you know, it's tiny island communities living in a very rural lifestyle. And I do know that from a couple of trips there, but I've never explored on foot. So that was just such a fantastic way to see the islands and to be closer to the island communities, because it's pretty obvious when you're out there that you're doing something a little bit weird, you know, like it's not a highly trafficked place with people running around with packs on their back. So that was a really a really nice thing to experience.
Was it the gamut of the full kind of Scottish experience from sort of quite a deadpan expression to going, oh, that's cool, or did people make a fuss?
So, well, first of all, I remember, this isn't directly related to that, but I remember one day on the islands, it was beautiful weather, like sunny and actually hot for Scotland. And I passed this guy who was working on the road and he was like, oh, it's not a bad day. Like, no, it's not a bad day, that's for sure. Like, it was that real understated, like, yeah, 100%. It made me laugh so much because I was like, it's awesome. Oh my gosh, look at the sunshine in the sky. It's so beautiful. And they're just like, whoa, okay. I'm like, I think I'm not so British anymore when it comes to my excitement levels.
Yeah, there you go, an Aussie. Yeah.
But in terms of meeting people, and, you know, if you're referring to like talking about what I was doing, it was very odd. And don't get me wrong, I probably just underplay what I'm doing because I'm like, it's, you know, that's a big discussion and not everyone's interested. And there's, I realize I don't want to offend Brits because I am one also, as well as my dual citizenship. But there was like this real politeness, you know, kind of like, how are you? Like at a campsite, you know, what are you up to? Are you on holiday? And I'd be like, oh, yeah, I am. You know, where have you been? I was like, oh, I'm just like running from the Mull of Galloway up to the north of the Outer Hebrides. And they're just like, you know, oh, that's nice. Yeah, you know, have you heard about this new campsite? Like, just not clocking whatsoever. And when it happened initially, I thought it was funny because it's like, that's pretty cool. This is how insignificant this whole thing is. You know, this really is just something that's important to me. And in the grand scheme of things, you know, it's just this silly adventure I've mapped. But as time went on, I was like, oh, I miss the connection of like my community of endurance friends who get it, you know, who I can relate a little bit. And there was just, yeah, none of that whatsoever.
So a lot of thought went into the route and a lot of thought went into the timing of the route too, because the last day coincided with a birthday. And I guess with any sort of one thing that lots of people in the endurance community have in common is they like to sort of, I guess, offer up or advocate or draw attention to other causes, you know, because you could have just done it for Sarah's big run across Scotland because yay, Sarah, but you did it to raise funds for Free to Run. So tell us about what Free to Run is.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. So yes, I was fundraising for Free to Run. It's an NGO started by an ultra runner herself, Stephanie Case. If you haven't heard of Stephanie Case, she's an incredible Canadian ultra runner. She does the long stuff, that's for sure, like all the long runs in the Alps, and is an incredible athlete. She's also a human rights lawyer, and she started Free to Run when she was working in areas of conflict like Afghanistan. And she was training for these huge races like Tour de Géant, just by like dragging a tire around a compound on a military base. And at the same time, my understanding is she was working in a women's shelter as part of her UN role, and realized that the women in the shelter in Afghanistan were way more interested in the fact that she ran than anything else. And so she's essentially created this NGO that it drives change in like gender norms in areas of conflict like this, where women being seen or visible in public spaces is not necessarily okay. Women certainly don't have the freedom to tie up their laces and just go and run around the streets. And she's created this incredible program of, they're running programs for women, but it's so much more than that. It's about, you know, empowerment. It's about leadership. It's about the visibility of them out in these public spaces. So yeah, I think recognizing my privilege, you know, I can go and run whenever I want. I can fly across the world and go for a run. I have so much privilege as a woman in that sense. I was just really keen to, I guess, elevate the voice of this NGO and support them as well. And I'm so, so grateful to everyone who's donated to my fundraising, because I think it's an incredible cause. And I will just plug, there is, I think it's like a 30-minute short film on YouTube. It's called Free to Run. It was created by The North Face. And it talks about Stephanie and the organisation. It's a really worthwhile watch.
We can put a link in the show notes if you send us one. So if you want, yeah, people who are listening and want to support Free to Run, we'll include a note in our show notes. I actually met her in Bamiyan Airport.
Oh, wow.
In Afghanistan, central Afghanistan, yeah.
Wow.
She was with a group of women and they'd been running, I think they'd been running, maybe they'd been riding, in Bamiyan. But just had a brief comment, like, what are you doing? Like, yeah, anyway. And, yeah, just that. I remember speaking to a particular young woman in Bamiyan who had decided to start riding a bike, and Bamiyan's a pretty liberal, things have changed now since the Taliban arrived, but at the time was a pretty liberal place. But even so, the discrimination and vitriol and abuse that she suffered just for wanting to ride a bike, and you think, riding a bike, you know, like we just can just go and, like you say, just go and do that. And yeah, it's important to recognize that that's not the way for lots of people, is it? So, I mean, hats off to you for actually raising that, the profile of Free to Run and raising money as well. Yeah. It's so important.
I mean, a tiny contribution in the grand scheme of things, but yeah, these are things are counts. Important. Exactly.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So 3 weeks back home, not much time to decompress, but light to light or Venn diagrams, you know, which is...
Or light to light in a Venn diagram.
Oh!
You could just have light circle.
Mind blown.
In the middle. I want to ask you a question. I've got a story about Afghanistan. We have the good fortune to be... So my wife and I and daughter, we're going to... And a friend of ours, Scott Wigg, and Sean, we have the... organizers of the Afghanistan Marathon now living in Auckland, because when Afghanistan fell back to the Taliban, they got out and they ended up in Auckland via my mother-in-law, long story, and we're going to help them to put on the first Afghanistan Marathon in exile in Auckland next year, which is super cool. But the Taliban actually rung up the organizer of the marathon and went, "Hey, do you want to come back to Afghanistan and put on that marathon? It'd be really cool if you could help us, you know, show a softer, more sort of athletic side of the Taliban." And he went, "Can women do it?" And they were like, "No, dick," and put the phone down. It's incredible.
Wow. Like, wow.
And that was part of the thing.
It just goes to show.
Hmm?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. It's gone since the Taliban have taken over. It's, yeah.
I mean, not to make it
again,
too
unfortunately, but.
Geopolitical, but it's scary, isn't it? Like, that was his first question. He was so pleased with himself when he told us that story. He was like, and I said to them, "Can women do it?" And they just hung up on me. So, yeah, it does matter. Yeah. What you said before, I challenged you on something. You said, you know, "I'm not in the best form of my life." What did running mean to you when you started, and how... What does it mean to you now? Because I challenge you on that. You just ran the length of Scotland.
I know. I did. And funnily enough, I had an induction at the powerlifting gym this morning and was like, "Oh, I'm just like in terrible shape." And he's like, "What have you been doing?" And I was like, "Oh, I just got back from doing a bit of a run." And then he's like, "What? These things don't add up." But yeah, I mean, I guess it's how we grade ourselves and where we place value and where our focus is. When I started running, you know, like I say, back in the day, that was very much for team sport. And I, as time has gone on, and probably in the last few years especially, I've just realized there's been such a shift in me in terms of running, training. Like, I used to train hard and push myself hard. You know, I was also a CrossFitter and did like all the things like that. And it was almost like a punishment, you know, when I look back, it really almost was. It was like, never driven by like physical appearance, but just by like how hard can I push myself, because for some reason I want to like suffer and see how much I can suffer. And you know, I would have a coach and follow a program, and I would follow a program to a T and or do more. But you know, if I wasn't feeling great, if I hadn't had great sleep, it didn't matter what was on my program, I'm gonna go and like hit those splits now. And it was funny working with Nick, because it's like, I think I'm a bit of a rubbish person to coach, because like I really appreciate all the programming, but at the end of the day I do this for, you know, it sounds cliche, but for the joy. I love being outdoors. I love that simple movement through nature, on trails especially. I don't want to run around my block 10 times. I don't care if I finish my run and my Garmin says 6.8 kilometers and I, you know, I used to round that up. I don't care at all. That just doesn't drive me whatsoever. So there's definitely been a big shift in that sense. But realistically, I'm not in the greatest form of my life. You know, I am considerably heavier than I've been. I do feel a lot weaker, you know, as an athlete. Like I do, that's why I joined a lifting gym, because I actually do want to strengthen up and ironically have more confidence in my body, which sounds silly when I've just done a 700 kilometer run, but I trust myself moving in one direction slowly on feet or on a bike, but I don't trust myself in that more dynamic kind of movement.
Do you enjoy it more? I mean, that's the thing, like, you did it help suffering?
I enjoyed the suffering is the thing. I never didn't enjoy it. I'm not very good at doing things I don't enjoy, which sounds again like such a privileged thing, but I enjoyed it in that sense. But the general contentment in my life, I guess, and the sense of adventure and just being, you know, it's one thing that really came out so strongly for me in Light to Light was like, I'm here because I want to be for myself, you know, not for anyone else. I don't care what other people think. Yes, it frustrated me at times, but realistically, I'm doing this because it is like in my heart exactly where I want to be and what I want to be doing. Yeah.
Did you ever think about, I mean, there's another arrow in your quiver, podcasting. So not only are you, you know, creative in the sort of the visual sense, writing, whatever possessed you to start a podcast?
Well, I messaged this dude who I discovered I really enjoyed his podcast and was like, what advice would you have? And his advice was, don't overthink, adapt and press go. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what we did. And yeah, that was me.
That was you, Matt.
Yeah. And that was,
we got there.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. But this is the thing, isn't it? Like, into the wee hours. I mean, how long have you been going for?
Yeah, we've been going a couple of years. And, you know, the reality is Into the Wee Hours started as something completely different. So I created Into the Wee Hours with the idea that I was like, I keep being approached by women especially, but not just women, who want to go and do overnighters adventuring. They want to run, they want to ride bikes, and they don't know where to start. And I had this idea of like, how can I create that platform for people to support them in doing that? Because I love doing that. And how cool if I could have this purpose to assist other people in doing that as well. And so it started off with an idea of maybe me being like an adventure guide, setting up trips, that sort of thing. That, for various reasons, didn't happen. But I was still seeing not just me doing this stuff. I was seeing all these other cool people doing cool stuff, and not professional athletes, everyday adventurers who have 9-to-5s, but are still getting out there and doing these amazing things. And so the podcast started because I was like, I really want to, A, meet these people and have these conversations and elevate the voice of these other people doing this cool stuff. So yeah, I mean, our mission is to elevate the voice of the everyday adventurer, and that's what we have stayed true to. We started off with a really good frequency of every couple of weeks, and we've tailed off significantly, and we'll come back, you know? Like, we haven't been as committed as you two have, but it's something I love doing. I just love the conversations.
It's about the quality, not the quantity. I mean, we go for the quantity. So, you know, as long as you're there for the quality, that's, you know, that's good. The world is good.
We do our best.
I mean, present company, you know, not accepted in that. The lack of quality comes from the hosts with the kind of the...
Yes, the not, yes. The not, sorry, clarifying. Thank you, Matt.
Knocking over the lights.
See, that's why we're not good. Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it?
Another example.
Yeah, another example. I had it in my head when I started. I thought it would be really easy. Like, when I wanted to start podcasting, was I got this written submission when I was editing Kiwi Trawa in a magazine, and it was this amazing narrative piece, and I thought this would be really cool to produce as like a podcast, so people could listen to it, and it would be super produced. And then I listened to like one episode of the Daily, and which was cool and super produced and snappy, and then realized there's like 40 people who make that, you know. And old mate and I, just it's the two of us, so you know, it's quite hard work.
Yeah, and so I co-host. I invited my friend Kristen to join me. Neither of us had any idea of what we're doing. We had your encouragement, obviously. And it is a lot of work. And, you know, that's the reason that we have had gaps. We started off for a year, and we didn't actually say we're going to release every fortnight. We were like, maybe every few weeks, let's have flexibility around it, because we didn't know what to expect. We did release every fortnight initially, but it is a lot of work. Like, there's no doubt, you know, all of the logistics of it. But every time we record an episode, I'm like, damn, I love doing this. It's so much fun. So yeah, it's like endurance stuff. It keeps you coming back.
It certainly does. And you know, you take something, for me, I take something different from every single person that we talk to, or every single interaction with Eugene. And I think about like how sometimes I have preconceived ideas of how a conversation might go, and it's always surprising. But I mean, what is the main, just sort of kind of thinking about wrapping things up, like, what's the main kind of focus of the podcast? Are you having guests on, or is it, you know, you and Kirsten together, or?
Yeah, so it's called Into the Wee Hours Podcast, and it is very much interview based. And we've done the odd episode where we've interviewed each other, but the idea generally is for the two of us as a duo, very similar to the two of you, to bring on guests who are everyday adventurers and have those conversations. Maybe it's about a specific race or a specific adventure they've done, or maybe it's just life in general. We do have a bit of a set format with quick fire questions to warm people up and that sort of thing, and ask incredibly profound questions like pineapple on pizza, yes or no.
Why is it even a question?
What's your answer?
Hey, what are your answers?
Yes.
Oh.
Yep, Team Sarah. Are you a no, Matt?
No, get in the bin, no.
So you're Team Kristen, see? And this is the thing immediately, that everyone has an answer to this question.
Like pineapple, pizza, I like pizza. So maybe there's some Venn
diagram.
There's not. It's just a list. The wall between it.
But yes, so yeah, interview based for the most part, and just, yeah, fun conversations with awesome people doing cool stuff who aren't sponsored to do that, who, you know, don't have that luxury.
Sarah, it's been so wonderful speaking to you. I'm sorry for the, well, I'm not actually, it's been fantastic. And we've talked about snakes, we've talked about Scotland, all the, and I guess it kind of speaks to the incredible, like, your adventure is woven through your identity and doing heaps and heaps of cool stuff and running the length of Scotland and getting out on the trails is has been so cool. But I got to ask you, and I'll ask the same question we ask everyone who comes on Dirt Church Radio, and that's Sarah Pendergrass. What's your greatest run ever?
So I am a big DCR fan, so I did know this question was going to come, and it's caused me some sleepless nights, I'm going to tell you.
Oh, no.
It's so hard to pick. I have had so many fantastic runs. And funnily enough, we mentioned Tarawera. I nearly selected that, but then I thought, no, I'm not going to pick a race. I'm going to pick an adventure run. But it is New Zealand based. So I use Strava on and off, but I was like, I'm going to search in my activity field for the word amazing, because I reckon I'll have written amazing in the description of some of my most favorite runs.
Oh, you went back onto, you went back in, into the archives.
I went into the archives, and the one that came up, I was like, I already had this in mind, so we're going to roll with it. And it was back in 2018 in New Zealand, and it was so simple. It was running up Mount Luxmore and back down on the Kepler track. And it was just one of those days out where, you know, you just feel like the fittest person ever. You're like running through the mountains, maybe not up that Luxmore grunt bit, but running down. There was an inversion, so it was just like blue skies, and then we were above the clouds. The hut, like the views were incredible. And I ate a sandwich on the summit of Mount Luxmore, and it was like the most delicious sandwich ever. You know how they taste like so much more amazing and beautiful places? Like, you've carried it up there, sit down, have a sandwich. I bumped into a guy on the track who is an English guy, Danny. Yeah. Turns out he knew a school friend of mine from primary school. I remember these Americans being helicoptered in as well. There must be like a helicopter pad or something up by the hut there. And I just thought, oh my gosh, you poor things, like you've missed out on this whole experience. You've just flown in, you know. But it was just one of those days. And catching the little ferry across the water to get there, dream adventure run day out. So that's it. And I actually put in my Strava title, I'm sorry to offend Kiwis, but I wrote that it was epic. Instead of epic.
I love it. That's just how you pronounce it.
Yeah. What? Where can people find?
I wanted to know, were there any Kia threats? I know I keep bringing it back to nature, but with your sandwich.
No, there were no dangerous wildlife encounters, no.
Oh, no, but no, not so much dangerous, but just like greedy.
If they stole my sandwich, I consider that dangerous. Yeah.
That's a threat to life.
Indeed. What was in the sandwich?
I can't even remember. I just remember the feeling of it being the most delicious thing ever. Yeah.
It was epic.
It was epic. Yep. Yeah.
An epic sandwich. Where can people find you, Sarah?
So Instagram is probably the easiest. My handle is all the gear nay idea. It's NAE, as in the Scots version. My illustrations are on allthegear.illustrated. And then if you want to check out the podcast, it's Into the Wee Hours podcast.
Look, Sarah, thank you so much for coming on Dirt Church Radio. It's been, it's been an absolute treat, and hope your recovery continues to go well and the processing. And thanks very much.
Thank you so much. It was so wonderful to meet you both. And I hope to meet you in person sometime as well, for sure.
That'd be wonderful. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Take care.
You know how she said it was only a dry snake bite? Like, I was kind of wondering, but I thought we'd probably spend enough time talking about it. But, you know, let's talk about it some more now. At what point did she find out that it was a dry snake bite? Like, there must have been moments when you see the fang marks. First of all, you think it's a stick. Then it's like, oh no. Then you see the fang marks. But, I mean, how long does it take to know that it's not a dry... Anyway, so these are the things that I've been lying awake wondering about since speaking to Sarah.
I reckon you'd know when your leg didn't, like, go purple and swell up to 3 times its normal size. That's probably...
Yeah, true. Okay. Yeah. All right. Thanks. That's reassuring.
Hemiplegia and car crash. You know, all those things. My goodness me. It just shows how closeted and safe we are in this country in terms of like stuff that can hurt you on the trails.
Indeed.
My God. Thanks, Sarah. That was an epic conversation. We can't wait to repay the favour and come on your podcast. But look, thank you very much. And thank you very much to you all for tuning in from the back of Eugene's car. We're on social media at Dirt Church Radio, and you can email us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. You can find us on all the podcast platforms. Like and follow if you fancy. And you can download direct from the website, which is dirtchurchradio.com.
That's not Rigby, by the way, just in case you can hear it. Thank you to send in. I'm getting confused because there's dogs running around the car park. Don't forget to write in with your greatest run ever. Did you really say that?
Nope.
Okay. Send it in to us. We'd love to hear from you. You can read them on the website and then get inspired. Send them into us, dirtchurchradio@gmail.com.
Thanks to our sponsors, Scott Running, Further Faster, Currens and Cielli. Thank you to our Patreon patrons and Wild Things. Stay tuned in for our show in 2 weeks when we have another great guest lined up.
Hei kona. Thanks, Rigby.